Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. Know, O honored guest, that far from being the mere literary relics from a bygone age, the heroic tales that first emerged in antiquity in and around the Mediterranean Sea are alive and well today. Indeed, they are thriving in the modern world. The Olympic Games, instituted by the Hercules of Thebes to honor the 12 immortals, are now celebrated worldwide. Transpersonal psychologists have taught us how to detect and interact with the Olympian gods that reside within our very own psyches. And tale tellers using media undreamed of by our ancestors still recount the past, present, and future exploits of Hellenic deities, demigods, heroes, and fabulous beasts. Now release the reality that holds you. Relax and enter the realm of timeless tales. Welcome, my friend, to Sword and Sandal Cinema and Brian's Drive-In Theater. Greetings and welcome, Brian. How are you?
I'm well tonight, Hercules. How have you been?
I've been doing phenomenally well myself, despite the pandemic and all the restrictions on movement.
I understand that. My my plans for December aren't quite what they used to be.
No, mine either. I'm really looking forward to see what you have to surprise us with today. I really enjoyed our last show.
Well, something that we talked about during the last show did sort of spark tonight's topic. On several occasions, you've mentioned Tim Burton's Dark Shadows, the movie that he did based on the television show. And believe it or not, it's still in the shrink wrap, but I did pick up a Blu-ray version of it at a discount department store a few weeks ago.
That is awesome. I look forward to your seeing it and so we can discuss it.
Well, same for me. I'm looking forward to it as well. But it's been, the end of the semester is here. This is finals week. It's been kind of busy with work. I've got a conference on Thursday. I just haven't had a whole lot of time to watch it. But I do promise to watch it at some point during the holiday season. Well, I got to thinking that, you know, sometimes old content, in order to be palatable for a new audience, needs to be mediated. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, if you can do that successfully, sometimes you can expose, you know, a younger audience to maybe some more, you know, vintage films, shall we say, you know, some of the older movies. And you and I had talked about a project done by a couple of guys out of Utah called Hercules Recycled.
Yes.
Well, I was poking around on Amazon Prime, and I found the brand new updated version of it. It's called Hercules Recycled 2.0.
I've seen that, too. I haven't watched it yet, but I also found it on Amazon Prime.
Well, I got to tell you, I loved it. In high definition, it's $2.99. The picture's really good. It's taken from really good prints of these movies. And it is a compendium, basically, of Hercules and Hercules Unchained. But it's very well done. It's very funny. There's a lot of – they've added a lot of CGI to it, and I don't know how – you might feel about that, but it's done cleverly. It's actually done very well.
Uh-huh.
You'll laugh out loud more than once. I guarantee it. And it's a lot of entertainment for $2.99 if you get the high definition version. If you're going to watch it on your laptop, I guess the standard definition, the $1.99 version might be okay. But if you are going to watch it on a bigger screen, definitely spend that extra buck for the high definition. I just rented it for 48 hours.
Oh, awesome. I'm looking forward to watching it now, even quicker than I was planning on watching it. I'd love to hear what you have to say about it. And don't be afraid of spoilers. I'm a fan of mythology, so even though the story's told differently, it's pretty much the same story. So don't worry about spoilers with me.
Well, I think I can talk about it without spoiling it so much. After watching it and loving it, I mean, I highly recommend it. If you are into these movies, and you know, don't mind, you know, poking fun at, you know, some of the tropes in them, it's really well done, and it's very funny. It looks more professional than I suspect it might be. producer and the writer put their sons in sort of a framing device for the film.
Okay.
They both have sons that appear to be, I would say, college freshman age, anywhere from about 18 to 20. And they're really not very, they're not obtrusive at all. Some of the acting, it's a little rough. You may be a little amateurish. But the CGI blew me away. I mean, you know, I mean, that can cost millions and millions of dollars for people to get right. And at least on my TV, you know, in the living room, I thought some of the CGI was really convincing. It looked pretty good. And, you know, a lot of the CGI effects that they added, and I read somewhere that they had added about 150 little things, you know, different things in scenes. And sometimes I really, you know, you can buy it from Amazon Prime for $9.99. And I almost wish I had done that, because I think it would stand up to repeated viewing. So you could pick out, you know, maybe something, some CGI in the background that you didn't you pick up on the first go around, or maybe the script is pretty witty and it comes at you pretty quickly, and you know, sometimes you can miss a line or something like that. So I think it would probably hold up to repeated viewings. And the copies of the movies, Hercules and Hercules Unchained, that they use are not pan and scan. They're widescreen. They're very nice, crisp copies. They look very good. So it's easy to watch. And the sound, you know, the Foley work and the script, I think it's a lot of fun. And I really do recommend taking a look at it. But I that just came out, I believe, back in the summer, either in June or July.
Yeah,
and
Kimmer,
it's something like that.
Stephen Smith told me
it's something like that. You know, if a movie like this could find an audience, you know, in a younger generation, I think it would make you more curious to go back and maybe see some of the old films without being moderated by, you know, a framing device in that case, or, you know, horror hosts, for example. I think did a lot to create cults around certain films.
Yeah.
Now, you grew up in Pennsylvania, correct?
I grew up in New York City. I've lived for many years in both Pennsylvania and New Jersey, as well as in New York.
Okay, well, for example, in New York, in Philadelphia, the horror host there, you know, back in the 50s and 60s, was Zachary.
Yes.
Who actually became, you know, sort of famous there for a little while, you know, about 60 years ago or so. You could see him on, he's on an episode of What's My Line, you know, for example. He popped up in a lot of variety shows, stuff that was shot in New York City, you know, obviously, but a lot of television was shot, you know, there back in those days. He had a top 10 hit in the late 50s, Dinner with Drac, that you hear often around Halloween. You know, it's a novelty song, but it's really cute the way it's done. You know, every market there for a while had horror hosts, and I think those of us who were kids and would stay up and watch Chiller Theater or Shock Theater or one of those, you know, in a way, a lot of those movies were mediated for us by the horror host. In my area, for example, we had Chilly Billy, which is Bill Cardill. Out of Channel 11 in Pittsburgh, and he had a whole shtick, you know, built up, you know, with fairly well developed characters. He would have you know, guest stars come in, you know, sometimes if somebody famous was in Pittsburgh, he might be able to get him, you know, on screen for a few minutes or something like that, especially if they were doing, if they were trying to promote a film or a book or something like that. And people who are from Pittsburgh as well. So, you know, on Chiller Theater out of Pittsburgh, sometimes you would see Barbara Feldon from Get Smart because she was from Pittsburgh. And whenever she would come back to the area to visit family, he would try to get her on the show, which was, I believe, if I'm recalling correctly, was on Saturday nights.
Okay.
I would say that in most markets, these films were on probably on Saturdays, you know, when kids could watch it. You've had fun all day on a Saturday. You didn't have to go to school or anything like that. So at night, you wanted something a little special, something to, you know, scare you a little bit or maybe even make you laugh. And I think a lot of us did grow up, you know, with these horror hosts. And I think that, you know, a cult has been built around a lot of movies that were shown on, you know, those old TV shows, certainly the ones that we remember. I mean, we've discussed Ed Wood films, for example.
Right.
Plan 9 from Outer Space ran, you know, in every market practically across the nation in some sort of syndicated horror film package, primarily in the 60s. And I can remember seeing it in the 70s, you know, when I was a little kid. And kind of bewildered by it even then, really. Some of it actually probably did scare me, you know, as an 8 or 9 year old. That would. But I think that it's a really good way in order to, you know, bring these films to a new audience. You know, it is to sort of have them mediated. And I think that has happened in the past. I believe you and I have talked about this before as well. There, about 30 years ago on Comedy Central, there used to be a television show called Mystery Science Theater 3000, correct?
Yes, I remember that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I was a fan of it back then. In doing my research, and I thought I did remember this correctly, several of the classic peplums that you and I talk about, you know, every month, were used as episodes for Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah.
The two Hercules films with Steve Reeves, Hercules and Hercules Unchained, ran on Mystery Science Theater. Hercules and the Captive Women with Reg Park. Colossus and the Headhunters with Kirk Morris, which actually was yesterday's movie of the day.
Awesome.
And and they also did Hercules and the Moon Men, which was Alan Steele, you know, one of your favorite Peplum actors.
Of course.
And, you know, it occurred to me that when those ran as episodes in the early 1990s, they exposed, you know, a whole new generation of viewers to these movies. You know, and they only ran, you know, what, about half a dozen of them or so. There are so many others, you know, that could be, you know, used in order to kind of enhance them for a current audience. And, you know, it's sort of a fine old tradition. Now, something occurred to me as well. You know who Dave Draper is, correct? The bodybuilder from the 60s, the blonde guy. He was in a few movies and a few TV shows. Still with us, thankfully. He's still pretty active on the web. Well, in the early 1960s, he did a hosting show, but it was for horror, but it was for Peplum movies, you know, Hercules films. And
right.
He was David Draper. I'm sorry, he was David the Gladiator, and it was you know, Southern California. It was a local TV show. It wasn't national. How awesome would it be? Because most of these films are public domain, you know, to sort of resurrect something like that, maybe even for YouTube. You'll find somebody to take on. You can call him Machiste, or perhaps Ursus, or maybe even Hercules. Who knows? But sort of, you know, build, you know, a show around that. I think it would be an awesome idea.
We were going to do that here locally before the COVID hit. I had a local TV station interested, and I sat and submitted all sorts of paperwork on different types of movies. So yes, that is something I would very much like to do. And the project that we're doing for charity involves elements of that as well.
Well, how are you going to handle it? Were you going to, talk about the mythology behind it? Had you thought about, some trivia or fun facts about the film, or perhaps the actors in it?
All that and more.
Okay, wow. So that would be very involved. It would take a lot of research.
I've also been posting clips from my television show from, it's been like 20 years already, that was on cable. It was called Thor the Barbarian, so there's still some clips floating around, so I posted them in our Sword and Sandals cinema group, and also posted pictures from when I was Samson, and things like Hercules, just to start the ball rolling a little bit. And I had a meeting today with the library, which is the first place we're going to be raising some money for. The project is ongoing, and I believe in it very, very strongly. And I've been trying to sell the idea now for like half a decade.
So, maybe it's time to just explore another option. Starting a YouTube channel or something like that. I mean, just create your own programming and try to drive the audience to it that way.
That's where we're going with it.
Excellent. So there won't be any spoilers for everybody, but how much can you talk about the framing device that you were going to use?
It was going to be like you said, very similar to the host, the horror hosts, and the Mystery Science Fiction 3000. There would be a story going on aside from the story in the movie, and I thought of a very creative way of tying the movies into the stories, and then tying it to different things that I'm currently doing in real life. So I'm not going to share the details. I want to surprise people with what we do. But basically,
right,
it would be a new way of experiencing these old stories, and a way of, at the same time, informing people about these stories, and hopefully arousing their curiosity to go back and re-explore them. We had originally, when I first started doing things with the idea, there was a theater. Now the theater, unfortunately, this is another one that didn't go where I would like it to go. We were going to show them in the theater and have it like on a particular night every week, and then just have people coming in and build a whole cultural thing around that, an interactive cultural thing around that. And that's still something I'd like to do. But right now with the pandemic, doing live things in theaters is not something that's on the table right now. But I haven't abandoned that. I have very grand plans for this, and I've spent a very long time. I actually, in Pennsylvania, when I first started playing with the idea, had local horror show hosts that I was talking to, about, getting together talent, and some of them were very interested. So your idea is a great one.
But it sounds like it was also your idea. But that's awesome. I didn't know that you were planning to do something like that. That's amazing. I'm really eager to see.
I hinted a few times because I'd love for you to be involved in that. I think that'd be now that the cat's out of the bag. I'll just ask you: would you like to be involved in stuff like that? I had a character in mind for you, plus a role for you and for the drive-in theater.
Excellent. But with the pandemic, I put on about 20 pounds, so I'm going to need a looser toga.
Well, we still have a little bit of time right now. I guess. Other than you, and I was going to approach you this week because I had a meeting about this today. I've approached everybody else over the past couple of days. I'm going to be creating a secret group on Facebook to get all the people who are involved on board. And people that volunteer volunteering with the oddest things. We even have somebody volunteering to be in a dinosaur getup. So there's a dinosaur on the table as well.
Well, I've got a – well, it wouldn't help to have a gorilla costume for this one. maybe I'll just work on knocking off those 20 pounds.
Well, we'll talk off the air on it, but I'm very excited by the idea. It's a good one. Like I said, I've also entertained it, and I believe in it very firmly. The obstacles that have been thrown in my way to slow this down have not deterred me. If anything, they've made me more determined to move ahead with it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. You know, sometimes when the going gets rough, it's so rough that, you know, it just stalls, you know, a project. And, you know, that's a shame, you know, especially when you have the drive to see a project through. Sometimes you do have to back up 20 and punt, you know, but overall, you know, if it's something that excites you that much, you have to pull it off.
It excites me a lot.
And I'm going to get, just guessing, I know you wouldn't be at liberty to say, and maybe you haven't even gotten to the point, but I'm going to guess that perhaps one of the first episodes might be an Alan Steele film.
Yes, I would say that's a very strong perhaps.
Okay. I was going to say, Hercules and the Moon Men, you know, it's public domain. There's great copies of it. I know I keep harping on copy quality, but I think that's important to a lot of people. You know, I don't mind, you know, watching something with negative scratches and, you know, occasionally a jump cut or something like that, but it might turn off some other audiences. So it always helps when there's a really good base quality, you know, film out there. You know, whenever you are doing one of these, you know, a horror host type shows, I should say, with a framing device around it, it's nice to have a good quality, you know, visual image, you know, to go along with the rest of the show.
And this is coming soon. I bought a new computer. We're waiting for additional RAM over the next couple of days. I got an editing program. So I just need somebody to sit down with me and show me how to use it. There are several ways on the internet to film that I'll be using. I'm looking into purchasing or subscribing to different types of images. I found instruction that pretty much fit what I had in mind. Somebody had actually made a DVD. They had done it. I think I'll do it better than they did it, but their ideas were very good. This is something I figured the first quarter in 2021, it'll be out there.
Well, you know, I'm not technophobic by any means, but you know, as I've gotten older, you might want to try one of my techniques for learning how to use the software and such. Find a 19-year-old to teach you. you know, I'm serious. Living in a college town and working on a college campus. This was years and years ago, but when I first got a smartphone, you know, they hadn't been out very long, and I was trying to wrap my head around it, you know, on day one, and I had one of the early iPhones, and my graduate assistant at the time took about 10 minutes out of her day, showed me everything it could do, and it was way faster than my poking around, you know, trying to figure out how to use it. That's my advice. You know, if you know, you know, somebody in her or his late teens, see if they know how to do some of that for you. I think you might be surprised how quickly you'd pick it up. Being taught.
And, I tried offering money through the Chamber of Commerce. Anybody who could show me how to do some of this stuff. And I contacted the local school. I have 16 years of experience putting together internships. And I even, when I had my TV show, I put together like an internship with film schools. But we live in a different age now where anybody with a you know, can create their own YouTube channel, so you don't need like people filming and editing and all those other things. So I'm sure that that will be solved. And if not, as the Blair Witch Project taught us, use the disadvantages to your advantage. You know, find out how you can tell your story through the limited medium that you have, and then tell the best story that you can, and make it look like you deliberately did it this way for a reason.
Actually, that's a very good idea. I like that a lot. But you know, I've toyed around a little bit with some kind of basic editing software. I mean, nothing, you know, nothing all that elaborate. And you know, a lot of it really is pretty user friendly. And if you can just find sort of a good, you know, mid-level package in order to do the editing on, I think you can make things look professional on a dime these days. I mean, that is one nice thing about the technology. You know, 20 years ago, if you wanted to shoot a film, you needed, you know, a ton of equipment, you know, great cameras and such. Now you can do it on an iPhone, you know, and the quality is good. It's great. I mean, it looks fantastic. So you don't need all of that equipment now. I mean, that's part of the beauty of it now. You know, you don't have to spend a fortune to make something you look good. And I think that's really a luxury, you know, of the technology these days. But on the other hand, you can see every mistake, you know, you can see every pimple. You have to be, you know, very conscious of that, you know, as well. And, you know, I for one, whenever I don't appear on television very often, but about once a year or so, I'm interviewed by one of the local TV stations for a specific event that I throw every year. And every year I just think, oh my God, I look awful. You know? So sometimes the technology I think is a little too good. And when I'm going back and watching some old films that had been transferred to, let's say, Blu-ray or something like that, you can tell that the directors never thought these sets were going to be, you know, seen in such detail that we can see them now.
Right.
And sometimes you can see, ooh, you know, boy, that that scene doesn't look so good there. Or I was watching a movie the other night where somebody was being like jerked up into the air, and you can see the strings where they're pulling them up, and sometimes the detail I think is a little too good. That might be a hindrance, actually, you know, when it comes to the technology. But I think it's fabulous, because I'm not saying that you had to buy a new computer and you're having to jack it up with a lot of RAM. And of course, I mean, there's cost associated in that, but, you know, really, I mean, you can do it for a song.
Now, that leads us to another question. Right now we have our own station, and, I'm doing maybe, let's see, I'm doing 32 hours of e-radio per month, anywhere actually from 29 to 32. And so we're on two stations, and I have an invitation to do more on one of the stations, one which is our old station. And in terms of archive material, there's hundreds of these round of podcasts. Plus, I have another 5 years of podcasts that I've done. Then I have 3 years and a movie based on the television show. So there's a lot of archived material that hasn't aired in quite a while, or, you know, had a very small range. So we have all that, you know, to integrate into what we're doing. But I was thinking of developing shows using like the new telephone technology that everybody's working through. So examples would be Zoom and Skype.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the first shows I would like to do is Sword and Sandal Cinema. So how do you feel about that? Would that be something that you're interested in? Because we can start working on that right away. And what we learn by doing that will definitely be helpful in the first more complex piece of it.
You know, I'm very excited to help out. And I don't know how we'll talk about how far you are, with the process, but doing a pilot or something like that, I think would be fantastic.
Okay, great. So you and I will start working on that together, and I'll invite you to the group where the bigger project is, and we'll take it from there. We'll aim for sometime in January launching the Sword and Sandal Cinema with Grimes Drive-In Theater, and let's see how that goes. And that might be the preferred way that we do the show from that point on. And then we always have the audio podcast as a backup.
Oh, that's awesome. And I think that's a great way to start the new year. You know, we're coming out of 2020, which I don't think has been anyone's favorite year.
No.
But we got to learn from it. And I know we've talked about this before, but I've actually had a few in my life, a few good things that have come out of the pandemic.
Sure.
And I do think it would be nice to go into a new year with the knowledge that we picked up from this last year, and hopefully we can get through the pandemic and try to get things. I'm not sure they're ever going to get back to normal, whatever normal is, but try to instill some sort of normalcy.
Yes. I've taken this as an opportunity because, again, everything is more uncertain than it normally is, to ask myself what is the coolest thing I could possibly think of to do with whatever time I have remaining here. And a lot of my answers are coming from there. And that's a very interesting place to be.
Well, and I like that you're thinking about, the mark that you want to leave.
Yes.
And doing it well in advance, so you can still make a mark. Doing it well in advance of being old and infirmed. I think people our age are still pretty vital.
Yeah.
And but you're right. It's now. You've got to make this happen now. Any kind of change that you want to make in life. Like when you're into sort of the middle years, you need to start doing it. You can't wait. You can't say, "Well, I'll do this next year," or "I'll wait until I retire." No, you've got to get on top of it. You've got to
do it now.
And
there might not be a later when you retire. There, but none of this might be. So it exists now. Do it now.
Well, and I'm not going to go down any kind of morbid alley or anything like that, but over the last year, I've lost two really good friends. One was my mentor for like 30 years, and I lost a really another really good friend about 6 months apart, each very quickly. They didn't have like wasting illnesses or anything like that. One had a stroke and passed away. The other, his liver just kind of gave up, just kind of seized. I did get a chance to see one of them right before he died, and he had always told me that you really shouldn't wait in order to if there's something you've always wanted to do, you need to go ahead and make those plane reservations.
Right.
A little tricky to do right now, obviously, but you need to set the wheels in motion. You've got to start this now. And actually, even for people who aren't our ages, even for for somebody who's like 22 years old, that's probably really good advice, don't you think?
Yes, I think so. I've tried to live my life that way. One of the things that really made me see that is I worked for a while in emergency rooms and in home health aid organizations as a supervisor and in the human services generally and as a patient advocate where I visited ICUs and cancer units and so forth. And one of the things I discovered, and it really made an impression on me, is that if you're lucid enough when you're in that bed that you're never going to leave, the things that come up as subjects are very limited. And the best thing you can have is great memories that you could share with somebody. And the worst thing that you could have is regret. And usually the regrets weren't, why didn't I do more with my career or something like that. Those never
true.
What used to come up as small things, why didn't I let this person know that I loved them? Why didn't I go to Europe when I had the chance? You know, just stuff like that, you know, little stuff that's very much within our control. The biggest treasure that you could have is another human being, whether that's somebody in your family, a friend, or even somebody who's paid by the hospital or the hospice to spend some time with you every day, that they care enough that you're alive to visit you and spend a few minutes with you. So I saw that, and I resolved as much as possible to live my life without regrets, or to minimize the regrets I had. Basically do whatever it is I really felt compelled to do and say what I felt compelled to say, and try not to piss off people in my life so that they occasionally visit me when it's my turn to be in that bed. So that's been really great. Life hasn't been easy, but that's been a great philosophy to guide my days with.
I think it is the philosophy. I don't see how anybody else could think any other way, quite honestly, especially at this age. But think about it this way too. I don't think you're going to piss anybody off, because what I have found is that at this age, I have finally learned how to sort of temper myself, and
Me too.
I can state my case without, getting all bent out of shape and without getting my blood pressure going, and which I think is actually the best way in order to get, you're not going to convince anybody by yelling and screaming, right? I think that is a lesson that I hope that I've learned, by this age. And I think a lot of people, in our age range have probably learned that by now. Because you're not going to get anywhere by, being ugly. Really, it just doesn't get you anywhere. It's always going to come back to haunt you. If you can put a positive spin, on whatever it is that you're trying to get across, you're always going to do better. You're going to win more people over. You're going to have more fans, and maybe you'll learn something in the process too. You're trying to see the other point of view, for example, and perhaps you need to accommodate it. The path that you were on just needs to be adjusted somewhat.
It's very true, and I too have learned in my 60s, not to get overly upset about most things, and to be able to express my opinion and to listen to other opinions without. As you said, it had my blood pressure go up, and that is a great gift, and that does come with age if you allow it. And it does make life a lot easier, because so much of life is how you decide to react to things rather than to what's actually going on. So once you see that, and once you see how much control you have over your reactions, not that life becomes easy, but it becomes a lot more easy than it was before you learned that trick.
Well, and I don't think life does get easier. I think it gets complicated, more complicated with every year. But I think you get better at handling the major issues that come up. And since you are dealing with major things, the minor things that maybe used to grind your butt to the bone suddenly don't seem as important, and you're more willing to let those go.
Yep. Most certainly so.
Yes, I couldn't agree with that more. And I think about these things, sort of things all the time. I'm 55 years old. I've got about 2.5 more years before I can feasibly retire, and I think I'm going to do it for precisely every reason that you mentioned about 5 minutes ago. You know, so folks, if you want to rewind and go back to what Hercules was saying, that's really important at this age, I could have said that with those same words. I mean, quite honestly, and I think it's just when you get to this age, you know, a lot of things do come into focus. You know, what really matters as opposed to what you thought mattered. You know, when you're young, you do think about your career a lot, and you want to be good at it. You want to be good at what you've chosen to do with your life. And maybe you want to be innovative, which you should be, you know, if you're young. And that's all fine. And you can have career satisfaction at any age, but after a while, you know, you want something for yourself, you know. And with the drive-in theater, for example, I've had that for a long time now, coming up on 23 years here, you know, in just a couple of months. And it is nice to have something that belongs to you, you know, a project that you work on. You know, idle hands are the devil's tools, right? And if you do have something, and I've got my website, I mean, I haven't added anything to it for a while, but I update it every morning. I'm constantly, you know, making tweaks here and there, adding a little bit of functionality, you know, on one page or another. And I think it's important to have something to take you out of yourself, you know, to take you away from the daily grind, and something that's all yours. A world sort of that you control, you know, so to speak. I know it sounds a little bit too much like Frankenstein and his monster, perhaps. but something born out of you,
right?
You know, and that's why I think this YouTube channel or this television show is just an awesome idea.
Thank you very much, and I'm greatly honored that you are going to be a part of it, because you're part of my life journey, and your website, regardless of how much or how little you tweak it, was a online shrine that I visited for many years before we connected, so it's all part of the same unfolding tale.
Well, and thanks to archive.org, and thank you for posting that, last night on Facebook. Recently, I mean, just within the last few days, I kind of stumbled upon another catacomb or corridor in archive.org. I found some more Peplum movies that I can run. Some of them are in pretty good shape. Running a search in archive.org takes some finesse. You really have to play with it some. I should have had a 19-year-old teach me how to use it, I suppose. And I've been using archive.org for a long time. I've probably been going into it for a good 15 years, if not longer than that. But I did find sort of a new way to run a search, and like I said, stumbled upon a whole treasure trove of movies. We've talked about this, you know, quite a bit over the year, but I'm doing a B movie a day at the drive-in, and I did sort of I will sort of run through genres, you know. For example, every day in October I had a different horror film.
Mm-hmm.
I will occasionally get on sort of I'll go on a tear with film noir or something like that. And every once in a while, I will have a week or so where, you know, it's all Peplum films. I do like to mix it up from time to time. I do find it interesting, the feedback that I get from people on Facebook regarding the movie of the day. Anytime I pick, let's say a big, you know, a famous Peplum or a big star like Steve Reeves or Mark Forrest or somebody like that. Uh-huh. I always get more feedback on those. Always. It's so interesting. And on some days I'll pick, you know, an interesting film. It won't be a Peplum. It'll be something else. And then there's practically nothing. It's kind of interesting the films that people respond to, for whatever reason. I don't know if it, I usually post either a window card or a half sheet or maybe even, you know, just a production still from the film every day on my Facebook feed, along with the announcement that this is the movie of the day. Sometimes, you know, the artwork, if it is a poster or, you know, a window card, will generate some discussion. And sometimes it's the star of the film, or, you know, maybe it is the, you know, the production still that I posted. But I always get a lot of feedback from the Peplum movies.
Yes.
And it's really good to see that happen, because, you know, I know we've talked about this a million times, but I don't want to see these movies slide into oblivion. Fortunately, if you are better at running a search than I am, you can find a lot of these, you know, to watch for free. You know, you can find them on YouTube, archive.org. So many people have Amazon Prime, and a lot of these same films are on Prime. Although I got to say, you know, some of the Peplum films on Prime are in such bad shape. I wish they would try to find some better copies, you know, of some of them. That's been one disappointment, I got to say, with Amazon Prime. Some of their Peplums are hard to watch. You know, the copies are just so bad. The sound's bad. You know, the color's blown out, and you know, there's only two or three of them left. I can still watch a film like that, but, you know, trying to suck somebody new into it would be tough, you know, with an image quality like that and sound like that.
Unless you deliberately use those. Ron Carson recently on his show on Ron Carson's Coliseum, he reviewed Fire Over Rome, which I'd never heard of, or I might have seen it a long time ago, but I haven't seen it in years. So I found a copy on Amazon for like $10. I'll be watching that this weekend while I work out.
I'm not familiar with that title either. Who is in it?
Lang Jeffries, Christina.
Wow. Okay. I am familiar with that.
But you're familiar with it. It seems to be Nero and Rome burning and Sinister Cinema put it out.
Well, Lang Jeffries had a really interesting career, and he did go to Italy and make some films. He's in a couple of Peplums that I recall. He's also in some Eurospy. He was briefly famous on a TV show in America back in the 50s and was once married to Rhonda Fleming.
Awesome.
That's probably his main footnote now. You know, Rhonda Fleming passed away this year, you know, probably just like 6 weeks ago or so, at the age of 97. And they were briefly married, but not for very long, maybe just two or three years. I'm not looking this up, so I probably should look it up and be a little more specific with it. But it wasn't a long marriage, and he was a bit younger than she was. And his fame kind of coincided with their marriage. I'm not saying that he married her for fame or anything like that, but that was roughly the time that they were married, when he was probably at his most successful. So I am familiar with that film that you're talking about. I've seen it titled Alone Against Rome, but you said Fire.
Yeah, Fire Over Rome. And
I
tend towards the mythical rather than the historical, although I do watch the historical, obviously. But I tend to repeat watch and binge watch the mythic ones. And this wasn't a mythic one, so I didn't recognize the title. When I put this on, it might be that I've seen it, you know, but I didn't recognize the title. I don't recognize the pictures on the cover. So we'll see when I put it into the DVD this weekend.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, these movies were titled, you know, any number of different titles, depending on which market they were going in. It looks like the titles for this film, though, are pretty cohesive. You know, if you you do a rough translation, mostly it does "Fire Over Rome" or you know something like that. So I just always found it interesting that that's a late peplum too. I think that was out in '65, and that was sort of the last year. You know, for the rise in peplum, you know, starting in 1958.
You've helped me
but
decide.
You'll have to let me know.
I definitely will. You helped me decide how I was going to what I was going to do the first few shows on. So thank you for that. I'm not going to share it yet during our podcast because again, I want to surprise people. You know, and
I understand.
Our conversation has inspired me. Thank you very much because now it's easier to put together. I got like the first half a year of shows churning in my brain. So.
Well, you know, I wouldn't really have any definite direction for you to go in, but I've been teaching on the college level for more than 30 years, so I do question a lot.
Yeah,
you know, I find that helps me. If somebody questions me about a project I'm working on, I will step back for a moment and think, why am I doing it this way?
Yeah.
Or this isn't working. Maybe I ought to try something else. That technique helps me. So I'm glad you were able to get something out of it. But let me know what you think about the Lang Jeffries movie. Now that I think about it, I don't think I've seen that title.
Yeah, well, let you know this weekend after I've had a chance to watch it while I'm working out. Again, it'll probably wind up with my other historical ones on a shelf for when I feel like watching historicals. I found actually that some of the TV series, I don't mind watching them every few years, like Rome and Spartacus and even I, Claudius.
Mm-hmm.
Holds up rather well over the years.
I Claudius is brilliant.
Yes.
I saw that. Oh golly, I can't remember. I didn't see it when it was originally on Masterpiece Theater back in the late 70s. I didn't see it until probably the 80s, 90s, something like that. And
mm-hmm.
that is brilliant.
Yeah,
they didn't. As you're watching it, the sets are barely there. They're very minimalistic, but you don't care.
Right.
The performances are just spot on, and some big name people came out of I, Claudius, but the performances are like John Hurt's performance as Caligula is just fantastic. It's riveting to watch, and my partner talked me into watching it, as I recall, when we did, because I was thinking, I like stuffy British stuff, but I was thinking, oh God, there's so many episodes of this, am I going to be able to get through it? And after the first episode, I was hooked.
Mm-hmm. My wife could
watch it
again.
Claudius is brilliant.
I remember watching it on PBS, then years passed and my wife had convinced me to watch it again. And then I was hooked and we have a set of it. And then not too long ago, I believe in Goodwill or the Salvation Army, one of those thrift shops, I found the whole thing for $1. So I picked up the second set in case something happens to the first DVDs.
You found that for $1?
For $1. It's like
Yeah. I'm glad you have a backup in case I would need it. As I recall, when that set came out, it was kind of pricey. I know we have it. I have no idea what we paid for it though. But it is a lot of entertainment, and it sort of was. Perhaps the first thing that I ever really wanted to binge watch. I don't think I could because You were saying it, it made me recall the first time I saw it, we were taping it off PBS, you know, so yeah. This was just like, you know, a VHS thing. So that tells you exactly how long ago that was. After seeing that first episode, I thought, well, gosh, you know, I've got to wait until next Sunday night before I can see the next one. And I'm not a binge watcher, by the way. I can't sit still for that long. You know, I can't watch a whole season of anything, no matter how good it is, in one or two or three sittings. That's just not me. If you do see something that sparks your interest, that first episode that does reach out and grab you, I certainly understand the impulse to watch the second one.
Yeah, I'm not good at sitting and watching anything. I can't sit still, but if it's on the TV, I'll listen to it. I'm working out, while I'm writing, while I'm doing something else, like answering correspondence. And then if something sounds interesting enough to watch, I'll turn around and watch it for a few minutes and then until I get absorbed in my tasks again. And I just looked at we have like 4 minutes left, and I want to give you a chance to let people know how they can contact you.
First of all, if you want to stop by the website and take a look to see the different types of genre represented and the different actresses and actors profiled, you can go to briansdriveintheater.com, and that's Brian with an I. Also, please stop by Brian's Drive-In Theater on Facebook. Once you get to Facebook.com, type in Brian's Drive-In Theater, and you should wind up at my doorstep.
And Brian is very generous and very quick in getting back to you if you contact him. So I encourage you, if you want to talk to Brian, to talk to Brian, and you will not be disappointed. And I will spoil the first episode. What I'm planning on doing is we're going to talk about you and the drive-in theater. And I know you've shared the story several times in our podcast over the years, but we'll do it with visuals this time around. We could take people on
the
website, too, when you talk about the website.
Well, I can talk about the website for hours on end, as you know. So
we'll do part two and part three.
That will not be a problem.
Brian, again, thank you so very much. I am glad that our paths connected, and I'm glad that we're working on this creatively together. And I'm looking forward to our future creative efforts. Keep up the good work. May the drive-in theater always endure as a beacon of light for those interested in B-movies. And I know that definitely, if there are gods on Olympus watching those mortals who preserve mythology, you've earned your place because you've done more to keep these movies alive than most people. And they're certainly living mythology. And many people I've spoken to over the years, they saw these movies at some point, and that led them to study the myths that they were based on. So thank you again on behalf of Mount Olympus.
I thank you, and I trust you'll be in touch.
I most certainly will. And thanks to those who joined us from home, be it listening live while we're talking or later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And we're going to close with Mighty Elohim by Linnell Griffin. Thanks again, Brian. Take care. And happy holidays and happy new year.
Thank you.
Spirit, sing your song, for with the battle.